Yo, what's up? It's your man's Joaquin. Make sure y'all like, comment, share, and subscribe to the podcast, because we got some dope interviews. So now let's get into the podcast. They listening to me. Yo, what's up? It's your man's Joaquin, and you tuned in to another episode of Heat Level Podcast. What's up, world? So you know I got a very special guest, a king, a woke black man, a hip-hop artist, and a world traveler. He goes by either Camp Cleveland, or you could call him Taye Uru. You hear what I'm saying? Hey, my man's man, what up, King? What's going on with your brother?
Peace and blessings, family. Thank you again. I truly appreciate you for allowing me on the show. Congratulations on the new film. It's definitely an honor to connect with you once again.
No doubt, man. So I've been seeing what you've been doing and stuff. I've been seeing your promotion trips to going to Egypt, going to Africa and doing your promotion trips. Now, for the people, man, let them know exactly where you're from. What made you get into hip-hop and becoming a world traveler? Get the people a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I got into the travel at an early age. My mom, she used to drive the Greyhound bus, so she would take me and my brothers and sisters sometimes to different cities. So we was blessed, you know what I'm saying? That's when I first gained my interest of wanting to go to new places and seeing new things and learning about different cultures and trying different foods and stuff like that. So she would take us to places like New York, Chicago, Cincinnati, you know, places around the way within driving distance.
And then after that, you was like, you know what? I think I want to go over the seas. I want to go see where my people came from.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Once I got older, you know, when I became an adult, I traveled on my own. I went around the states first, you know, different states, going down south, going to the West Coast, you know.
No doubt.
I done been about 45 different states. So in 2010, that's when I started going to different countries, you know what I'm saying? Going to Europe, going to Africa, going to South America, just seeing different parts of the world, wanting to learn, you know, about more cultures and more languages and history and, you know, meeting some real, real cool people. I've been blessed with the opportunity to write music, record, shoot music videos, perform in different countries all across the world.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Now, when you go to Europe, right, now they say Russia. I know it's black people in Russia, but it's probably like a handful of black people in Russia. Have you ever been to Russia?
Man, I've been to about 70 countries. I've never been to Russia once in my life.
Hey, man, look. You might want to take a trip up there and see how white it really is. You know, hey, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, right? But think about it. You will be different. Yeah. Different is good, right? Different is appealing. You know what I mean? You have all the Russian girls, you know that. They're like, what? Is one here for real?
Right. I'm going to have to make it out there, man.
Hey, let me ask you, okay, when you go to Egypt, what is your best part about going to Egypt, right? I know somebody that's from Egypt. I actually go eat at their Euros place a lot. And, you know, he tell me a little bit about Egypt, you know, but he's from there, right? Us being black man, you know, that was raised and birthed in this very country that don't even like us anyways. I'm just want to say that, how is it going to Egypt, you know, going to the motherland of all things? You hear what I'm saying? All things. If y'all want to argue with that the original man is the black man, argue with it. But go do your history. Go do your research. And it will let you know what's the original man was. And that's not even, you know, it ain't got nothing to do with being racist or nothing. Just go do your history, you know, really go in your history and see why Africa is the motherland. But how does it feel like, you know, going to the motherland, being able to see those pyramids, man, that are black people built, and they don't really know how they got stuff so precise. But how is that feeling stepping into that continent, I'm going to say? And how does it feel just to know that you able to go where your people came from?
Oh, man, it's an amazing experience. It's almost unexplainable. And then it depends on which country you go to, because Africa has more countries than any other continent in the world. Africa is the most genetically diverse continent in the world. If you're talking about humans, if you're talking about animals.
Animals, yeah.
minerals, the diamonds, gold, oil, platinum,
whatever,
all of that stuff.
Got
so
it
you
all.
Know what I'm saying? Yeah, you're gonna see a little bit of everything. I've been to about 15 or 20 African countries. Egypt specifically, I've probably been to Egypt about 10 different times. Egypt itself is an amazing place because you get to see some of the greatest structures in the world. You know what I'm saying? Out of the ancient wonders in the world, it's only seven. So the only one that still exists, the only one that you could touch, the only one that you could see is in Africa, and that's the pyramids of Giza. And like you said, they don't know how they built it. It was so immaculate and aligned with the stars. And that's where astrology and science and math and art and culture and martial arts and everything you could think of, that comes out of Africa. And going to Egypt specifically, when you go into the Valley of the Kings, the Valley of the Queens, Hatshepsut's temple, the Temple of Karnak, Temple of Luxor,
Abu Simbel. Throw it out there then, brother. Throw it out there.
Yeah. You see black people. You see dark skin images. You see people with afros. You see people with braids. But by us living in America, living in a society that's based on racism, that survives off racism, you know, they make movies where the greatest, you know what I'm saying, architects in the world, and they shown us that they weren't black people. But when you go over there, you can see for yourself, and it wouldn't be an argument at all. So it's a very empowering feeling. It makes you feel like, okay, before slavery, we had thousands of years of history. We had thousands of years of greatness. Of course, everybody wasn't a king or a queen for sure, but even a peasant in Egypt was in full mastery of whatever craft or whatever. You know,
whatever. Yeah, if he was goldsmiths or whatever they that made the swords and made the, you know, he had they had their crafts, man. Like they mastered those crafts. You get what I'm saying? And I think it's just real beautiful. And the thing about it is, we speak of race, right? We speak about race in this country, and everybody know how it is, especially when it comes to the black man, you know, and the black woman also, you know. But, you know, removing the black man removes a lot, you know. Taking the black man away from the home removes a whole lot of structure. So what it is you have our women out here that don't need a man, as they say, but what happens is they've been taking the man away for so long and giving the women stuff from the government that a lot of these women don't think that they need a man, you know, especially a black man. You know, it's like the black man is like unwanted. It's like, okay, it's a trend now, right? It's like, get you a black man, you know what I mean? Especially if you're not even a black woman, right? You know, and me, my kids are biracial, you know, and my girl's white, right? So the thing is, people say, oh, so you like white girls, and I always tell people this. Well, actually, I done dated Kurdish women. I done dated women from Jordan. I done dated Asian women. You know, this is what I like. It's like, if they were good, and they were people that I can align with and I could talk to, and that's what it was, because at the end of the day, we could talk about race in this country, but at the end of the day, you bring them back and we take it back to the motherland. We know exactly who y'all really are. You know what I'm saying? Because everything that was split from thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, and you went and half of the people went up to the north and other ones stayed down in the south, you know, close to the equator and stuff of Africa. And evolution is a real thing. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. That after so long, any species will adapt to their environment, you know? And that is like just truth. You get me? If I take you, let's be honest. If I take you and I throw you in a jungle, right? I throw you straight into the jungle and it's a fence around, you can't get out that jungle. What you gonna learn to do?
Survive.
Right? You're going to learn how to make spears out of trees. You're going to learn how to not die by these lions and stuff. You know what I'm saying? You're going to actually learn about the poisonous of frogs, even, and spiders and snakes and even plants that can kill you. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna adapt to that environment. And I think that a lot of people don't understand that, especially about black men, man. We a lot of us learn to adapt to where we at. You know, and I think that a lot of us don't use the power that God gave us, which is, you know, freedom of choice in the mind, that we don't use that to our full capacity like we should, because we're so caught up into bringing another brother down, instead of lifting another brother up and bringing a brother up when he get up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So what you think about... the state that we are in America, especially when it comes to black entertainment? I'm gonna put it that way, because we know for years these record labels and television places have been leeching off black talent for a long time, because we don't know ownership. You know, a lot of us wasn't taught ownership. So what you think about the media getting black media plastered all on TV, and a lot of us is not even reaping the fruits of the labor of that?
Man, I think it's a good time to be independent. It's a good time to own your music, own your artwork, own your books, own your movies, you know, do things independently if you can. Unfortunately, the people that came before us, they didn't have access to studios and cameras and internet. You know, you can make a movie off your phone, off your iPhone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no doubt.
Get better. You know, we didn't have platforms like YouTube and emails and different things. So I think we have all the tools that we need now to become independent. We just got to believe in ourselves and, you know, just keep working hard and connect and network with other people that's doing the same thing. So, you know, you might not sell a million albums, you know, as if you would if you were signed to a label, but maybe you might sell 10,000 albums. You know,
but you're gonna make them way more money,
right? And you can control everything. You can come out when you want to come out, you can own, you can lease, you can rent, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But if you do 1,000 books, you're selling your books for $30, that's $30,000. Some people don't make that much working every day at the job, so you know, the money is there, you know, the demand is there. People want to see new movies, they want to see something new, something they haven't seen already. You know what I'm saying? They want to hear new music. They want to hear something they haven't heard already. So it's a lot of opportunity and space.
I'm going to tell you something. And we're going to say this on the podcast, but we're going to have to do it before this podcast come out. So check this out. Now, what if we take it back to how it used to be, right? In a different form, right? You know, back then you could sell your CD straight out the trunk, $10 a pop, $5 a pop, and go right in your pocket. It only took you about $1 to make it. Right, and make the CD, and the cover work was like $50, and you got them printed off, even if it was at the Kinko's, you know what I'm saying? Whatever, however you had to do, but you made your money. So if you sold 100 for $10 a pop, that's a rack. You feel me? That's a rack right there. So what they're using now is clothing. Okay, if you got a clothing and you got something that align with what you're doing, I like podcasts, like you actually get a Heat Level Podcast shirt, right? So if you really feeling Heat Level Podcast, or actually Heat Level Films also, but I just say you feeling that and you say, look, man, I want to be part of that. If you get, and I was talking to this artist, and I really hope I can get this interview out. I got to really look at it again, but I told him, you know, young artist, I said, look, man, if you get you 100 true fans, you know, 100 true fans is going to spend $100 with you a month for a whole year. You understand what I'm saying? That's really all you need.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to be able to live the life that, you know, you can live off your music. Like, you can actually live off your music. All right? So you're talking about 100 people that's going to spend $100 with you a month. A month. That's 10 racks a month. That's $120,000 a year. From 100 true fans. All right. So let's just take it up a notch, right? And let's say you had 1,000 true fans and they only spent $100 with you a year. The concept is still the same, you know? So I always tell people, look, you got to understand that sometimes you only need them true fans. You don't need all these fake motherfuckers that don't really give a fuck about what you're doing. You know, they just there for the likes. You know what I'm saying? They just there for the likes. You get what I mean? So if you got 1,000 people that spend $100 with you every year, 120,000 a year, the same 1,000 fans that say, look, I'm gonna buy a hoodie that's $40, right? Or I'm gonna just say $30. They go, a hoodie, $30. Okay, I'm gonna go and get the shirt. The shirt, 20. You feel me? That's 50. All right, I'm gonna go and get the hat. The hat, 15. Oh man, I'm gonna get his, he got the new backpacks out. You feel me? Like, just because they fuck with you, they roll with you. 1,000 true fans, 1,000 that'll spend $100 a year with you. There you go, man. It's $120,000 a year, man.
Can't beat it, man. That's, man.
Break it. But you see how I broke that down, right? Mm-hmm. Think about it. If you think about that concept, people don't understand how if you really get on the grind and you really trying to get a product out, it can be done. Let me ask you this. Can you sell 10 shirts a day?
Man, I think you could if you got your, you know what I'm saying? If you got it in your heart and on your mind, man, you could do it. You could do anything you want to do, man. I went to 70 countries, so you could sell 10 shirts for sure. You could do it.
So 10 shirts, and I tell people, okay, 10 shirts a day.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And you charging $20 a shirt. That's $200 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's $1,400 a week, right? Mm-hmm. That's $5,600 a month. Think about it, brother. Mm-hmm. Think about it. 210 shirts a day for $20 now. 10 shirts. So basically, every week, all you got to do is sell 70 shirts a week for $20 a pop. Just think of the concept, brother. Just think about it. You telling me you can't get 10 shirts off a day? So, how was the grind? So is your grind really that strong? Because a lot of people won't this. They want the grind, but they want what these people have, but they're not really willing to put it all on the line.
Yeah, that's right. Hard work, man. You got to be willing to work hard unless you want somebody else to do it for you. And then at that point, they're going to take the majority of the money. So if you're going to be independent, you pretty much going to be working hard every day. Ain't no days off.
Now, I imagine, how do you feel about people that lack family, friends, girlfriends, wives get in the way of their dreams, their goals, you know, what they're trying to reach? How do you feel about that? Because I'm going to give you my feeling about it. But how you feel about people that basically waste 30 years of their life because they didn't want to disappoint the people that they so-called love and chase what they really wanted to do in life? And now they're just miserable as shit.
Man, you got to be strong. You got to be mentally strong. You got to surround yourself with people that support you and encourage you, that congratulate you, man, because it's kind of hard out here. Some people, you could be dating somebody and they don't push you to chase your dreams. You could be related to somebody and they may not support you. You could grow up with somebody, you could be best friends with them and they may never support you. It's people that I've been cool with my whole life. They'll never buy my mixtape. They'll never buy my book. They'll never share or like my post. You get what I'm saying? But then you might meet a stranger from another city or another country that might support you. They may be one of those 100 supporters that you're looking for. You know what I'm saying? So you got to look beyond, you know, the people that's closest to you that may not show support all the time. And then some people may show you support later on, because some people haven't been raised to show support. A lot of Black people don't know how to support, you know? So when they see somebody doing something good, they may feel a certain type of way and they don't know how to handle it or respond. But if you stick with it, they may support later. So you coming out with your first movie, it may be people that you depending upon them to show you support, and they may not support till your third or fourth movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they may not never show support, but you just got to keep grinding, keep networking, keep meeting people, go to different cities, go to different states, tap in with people with different countries. Even if you can't travel, you can still reach out to people online that may be interested. It might be people in London. Your movie might not blow up in your state or your city. Your movie
it might not even blow up in the U.S.
Right. You might.
By the way, I just got my passport 2-3 days ago. So.
Okay, that's what's up. Congratulations.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Felon. And got my passport. Like, oh, I didn't know a felon can get a pay. Look, man, y'all need to get educated. But go ahead.
Right. No, that's all I wanted to say, man. So if you think global, you have unlimited options. You get what I'm saying? You got 200 countries with hundreds of cities and states that you can tap into. You only need one. And that might be what some artists that we know that we don't hear from no more, they touring in Europe or they touring in Asia.
Yeah, Hobson doing that, by the way. Hobson, I listen to Hobson, and he over in the Philippines and Amsterdam, and they doing shows and they getting money because you're right about that, man. I think a lot of us try to say, I want to blow up in America. It's so many, like you said about my film. I got my film going to a lot of countries, you know. It's on Amazon. Real talk, it's going to be on Amazon, IMDb TV. But a lot of people don't know that there's a lot of countries that don't have Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got their own. Matter of fact, Spotify is not everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Apple Music is not everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's this thing called, it's called music.io, I think, and it covers the whole Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go through them to get on their streaming services. A lot of people don't even know about that. So they like, dang, okay, I'm getting heard here, but I'm not getting heard there. Man, you don't know what market you can tap into. You don't know who's going to love what you're doing, man. So you got to always be, what's that word I'm looking for? Open-minded.
Most definitely.
You know what I'm saying? And you being an artist, what is the greatest things about just being able to express yourself through your art?
Man, it's almost indescribable. I mean, it's a good feeling. I wish everybody could understand, you know, what I feel as an artist, especially at a time like now. A lot of people stressed out, a lot of people depressed. A lot of people's lives have changed significantly, you know what I'm saying? And they haven't found an outlet to deal with these problems. So I think art is definitely one of those ways, writing, recording, performing, you know, having something, having a purpose, being able to work towards something, whether it's a movie, it's a book, it's a script, it's an album, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a beautiful thing. And then also being able to perform and get feedback from people in different countries and different states, you know, having different artists send me music and asking me to be on their projects and different things like that.
And I bet that's an honor in a lot of different ways.
Definitely.
I want to ask you something. So, you know, you already know, man, this is E-Level Podcast, man. We do your top 4 hip-hop artists, okay? And let me tell you something. We don't do top 5 because this is E-Level Podcast. We do top 4. So we got top 5. I'm sorry. You got to eliminate one. It is top 4. So who are your top 4 hip-hop artists?
Let me see. What I say last time, my top 4 in the last 2-3 years, I'll say some newer artists, just some, you know.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, new. That's what I like to hear, some new artists.
Or, you know, people that done came out in the last couple of years. Like I said, what I say,
Kendrick.
Cole, Nipsey for sure. And my man, Freddie Gibbs.
Yeah, Freddie Gibbs. Hold on, that's Fred the godson that passed away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Freddie Gibbs, yeah. Didn't he get nominated for a Grammy or whatever?
He might have, man.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I don't even watch the Grammys no more.
Right.
Oh, that validation shit. I'm out the door with that shit. Like, I remember growing up, and I used to be like, man, I can't wait. I want to be on the Grammy stage one day. I want to be. Now that I'm old, I'm like, fuck the Grammy stage. Like, you feel me? People might say whatever, you bitter, which I'm not bitter. I don't give a fuck. It's just not my thing. Okay. I used to try when I first got out and people was talking about streaming, right? Like, what the fuck is that, right? I knew what it was, but, you know, and like, oh, man, you get a million streams on YouTube. You get a million streams. I'm like, me? Everybody talking about me and fucking streams. So when I started doing the research on the shit, and I'm like, the fuck is a million streams? You gonna get $15 for a million streams? Who gives a fuck about a million streams? And you and I'm not bashing anybody, but you see them put their plaque on a wall that says a million streams. And I'm like, okay, what did you pay to get them a million streams? Like, if you know, to promote it and all that, you might pay more than what you're gonna make, but you know, it's the plaque, it's the validation. I got a million streams, right? Like my film. Okay. Actually, the film is different from on Spotify and stuff, right? They got things where you can do and promote and stuff. Now, my film is going through Film Hub. Shout out to filmhub.com. Man, make sure if y'all ever want to release a film, y'all go to filmhub.com. They only take 20% of what you make and you get 80. And I'm telling you, that's like that's a distribution deal through music. If you think about it, it's 85-15 is like the best deal people was getting in the music industry. You feel what I'm saying? And that is good when you're getting 80% of what your film make and they only get 20. No upfront fee. You don't start. They don't take money until your film start making money. So that's real dope. But just saying that, when that film is released, right, they're going to do what they do, promote it, do what they do. But I got to promote it on my end. I got to tell people where to find it, where to see it. And then that's the thing. When they do that and they find it and where to see it, then the algorithm going, then they popping it up, then they promoting it. And my film going to go for like $1.29 to be able to watch it. And this is my thing. If I can get 10,000 people to watch my film a month, you know what I mean? Just a month, you know? And to see the work that I did, okay? Even if I can get 1,000 people a month, you know, that's still 12 grand, right? And not even the money, but being able to get my art out there, people been able to watch it, because I was going to do it for free and put it on YouTube, right? And I thought to myself, I'm a CEO, I'm a businessman, right? Yes, my art is my art, but I've been doing free shows. I be giving music out for free. Might as well say I'm giving out for free. I got it on fucking Spotify. It's free shit. You might well say, you know, but I'm getting a penny of a half a penny of a half a penny. Right. Might well say it's free, right? So I told myself, man, when I come out with this film, that I want people to pay to see this film, you know, because the work I put into it. And every dime, brother, every dime was my own dime. Nobody gave me $50. Nobody gave me $20. Nobody gave me $1,000. Nobody bought equipment. Nobody didn't do none of that shit, right? And it's so funny because now that I start promoting the movie, I'm seeing shit from people and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, oh, y'all didn't think I was making one. You know, I even got a family member, and I don't give a fuck if she even see this podcast. You gonna sideways me, then turn around and tell me to join your traveling fucking agency because you know I travel? What the fuck? Like, that makes you gonna curve me and then tell me to drive. What? Like, does that make sense to you? But like you said, man, blood might be thicker than water, but your blood ain't always the ones that's going to be there supporting you or the people that claim they love you.
Yeah, you're right, man.
So so how you feel about, I don't know if you watched that Jada Kiss and what was it? The Lox versus Dipset. I don't know if you watched that.
Yeah. I got a chance to see that. That was good, man. The Lox, they did their thing. I was surprised. I mean, you know, they got the catalog, they got the experience. I thought Dipset was going to come out a little bit better, a little more organized, a little more hyped up, but they didn't. But nevertheless, it still was a classic, you know, versus. And I'm glad I got to see that one for sure.
Yeah, and now they said Jada Kiss sales went up 200 percent after that Versus.
Yeah, appreciation.
So now younger cats are discovering the locks. That's dope, man. Just because of the technology and the era that we in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked to a former executive on my podcast. You know, he had the platinum plaques. He got, he worked with Biggie. He worked with Big Pun. And yeah, and he's in from D.C. And I asked him a question. I said, why do you think a lot of these people want the fame and not the fortune? Especially a lot of our people. Like, we cool to have 100 million people following us on Instagram, making that $1. We cool with having the chains and the cars and don't even own your house. You know, it's like flex as hard as you can until you go broke. Then that mentality our people got, how you think that we can try to get out of that mentality? Basically what Nipsey Hussle was teaching us, what Malcolm X was teaching us, what James Baldwin, I think his name was. James Baldwin was, you know, I am not your nigga. You need to make sure y'all go check that documentary out too. I am not your nigga. And people like that, and the civil rights leader that's trying to get black people into a state of ownership. Well, what you think is holding us back? Why you think that we are more into the fame than we into the generational wealth and the fortune?
I mean, I think it's two things. Number one, it's a part of the history and the culture. You know, ever since we got here, we've been exploited. So that's all we know. You only know what you taught and what you see. So you had to work for 400 years for free. You get what I'm saying? Then when we were free, look at all the things that we invented. Everything that we invented was taken from us and snatched. Made somebody else rich. All the music that we make the best music in the world, but the people that benefit from it, they don't look like us. That's why you see so many stories about artists that's broke, actors that's broke, athletes that's broke. Look at all of the work that the NBA players and the NFL players do, but the people that own the teams, they can't play football at all, but they get all of the money. So we excited about seeing somebody win a $100 million contract, but the owner worth $100 billion. So at that pace, we're always going to be at the bottom. And then, you know, you could just do things like I say, being independent, you know what I'm saying? Because the way it's set up now, if you got to go through Spotify, you got to go through YouTube, and you only can get what they tell you. You don't really know how many streams you got. What if you had 1 million people watching your movie? You got to accept the number that they give you. There's no way for you to manually count it. So that's why I like with things with my book, I sell the physical copies. So everybody that want to buy my book, they got to buy it from me. They can't get my book nowhere else. And I'm creating I sell as many, but I'm creating a more concentrated fan base. So when I come with more books, you know what I'm saying? Eventually I'll make more money and I'll have total ownership because it's not necessary for us to continue to make other groups of people rich. You get what I'm saying? Spotify, yeah. They probably, the person that own that probably don't make no music at all. So why should they get all of the money? You know what I'm saying? And then a way that we can help break that cycle is by showing support, supporting each other, recycling the black dollar. We can create cooperatives. We could do food cooperatives, land cooperatives, housing cooperatives, financial cooperatives. You know, the list goes on. You know what I'm saying? It's enough of us to where if we put in a little bit of money, we don't need a lot of money. If everybody put in a little bit of money, we'll have a lot. You know what I'm saying? Even if it's just in terms of feeding ourselves, clothing ourselves, housing ourselves, you know, holding our money. We put so much money in these banks, but then when we try to get a loan, we get denied. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All the corner stores is owned by other groups of people. So they could sell us anything. They could give us anything. They could give us processed food, cancer causing food, you know, anything. You know what I'm saying? So we have to take ownership and have full control of the things that, you know, we produce and we invent.
I tell you, okay, so you know, when we talk about black owned black stuff, and what it is we got people that are in position, right? That are really in position to be able to make some of those changes. Mm-hmm. But why haven't they did it? Why do you think? You know, not even speaking no names. Why do you think they ain't made that step? Because they don't want to risk what they got. You know, they don't want to risk and say, okay, if I do this, I might lose this deal with Nike. If I do this.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I feel what you're saying. I mean, they're part of the machine as well. It's just like, imagine them. They're in the same position you in, but they just got more money than you. You get what I'm saying? You might look at this person like, damn, he got $100 million. He could do a lot with that. But the person that's paying him got $100 billion. So they just as far as what our money is closer to theirs. Like say LeBron, for example, or something, say he got $1 billion.
Which he actually is a billionaire now. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So me and you, we got a better chance of catching up with LeBron than we do the dude that owned the Lakers. He like 100 times ahead of us. You get what I'm saying? So even though he had more money than us, he's still kind of in the same position as us. You know what I'm saying? So it's like he just moved up the ladder. And I'm not knocking him or nothing. That's good that he made $1 billion, but that's just an example. You get what I'm saying? We can go from 0 to $1 billion quicker than we can go from 0 to $10 billion or $30 billion or $40 billion.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what's so crazy is it's a lot of heavy hitters in the game. Just think about it. What if Jay-Z, P. Diddy, LeBron James, Oprah Winfrey, Kanye West, and the new billionaire of them all, Miss Rihanna. Congratulations to her. She's worth $1.7 billion now. Now, all of them came together and said, look, we gonna create a label. We gonna create a football team to play with. We're gonna create a basketball team. We gotta create a filming company. All of them come together on a board, brother. Mm-hmm. They come together. Brother, just think about it. If they came together to grab that and be like, hey, we are fit to put this dynasty together. And this is what we gonna do. Cause look, Tyler Perry is doing what he do, right? And he's doing it a little bit by himself in a way. You know, he's getting a little help from the white folks more than he say that he's not, but he is. You know, he say he's not Hollywood. He's not. He built his own Hollywood. But if we had more people that was on that thought process of Tyler Perry, and it was 10 of 5 of them, and they did it all together, you know what we could do? The type of damage, boy, they scared. Because maybe they'll try to take them out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's cooperative economics. Like I say, if everybody put in a little bit, so LeBron don't have to put his whole billion up. If he got 10 other billionaires with him and they all put in a couple mil, then they can make it happen. That's exactly what cooperative economics is. But it's a lot of
Uncle Tom.
Fear is a factor. You know what I'm saying? We just celebrated, what was it, the 100th year anniversary of the Tulsa, Oklahoma race massacre. So
Yeah. How many? They killed over what? Thousands? They burned that town down.
Yeah.
It ain't been a town like that since. They say Atlanta, but let's be real. A lot of stuff in Atlanta is not black owned, like they say. Mm-hmm. I go to Atlanta. It's a lot of black people. But I was downtown and I saw the Wahlburgers. I saw a lot of places that was not black owned, you know? And I just think for us even to have something like that again, we got to get away from that Willie Lynch syndrome, which a lot of us are stuck in that, you know? And you've been a world traveling. You've been a guy to go to Africa. You see the differences of America than Africa, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I believe that Africa is a better opportunity for Black Americans. I mean, it's almost undescribable because imagine you get on an airline. It's owned by Black people. The flight attendants is Black. The pilot is Black. You go to an airport named after someone Black. You go to the ATM, you take out money. The people on the money are black. The taxi driver is black. The baggage handler is black. The firemen are black. The police is black. The mayor is black. The government's black. The president's black. So, you know, that racial oppression, that racial fear, that racial tension is automatically alleviated. You know what I'm saying? And there's dozens of countries in Africa that are far safer than the United States. Less gun violence, less mass shootings, less violent crimes. You know what I'm saying?
Like, but that ain't what they put in the media.
Oh, no, definitely they're not going to put that in the media because they don't want us to reconnect with our brothers and sisters on the continent. Several African countries have offered citizenship. They've offered land. They've offered business opportunities. They've invited African-Americans to come back to Africa.
Like Ghana. I know Ghana openly did it.
Yeah, definitely.
Said, come back home, we got you. Mm-hmm. But they don't see that plastered all on the news, do you?
And you seen in 2019, it was a lot of celebrities that went to Ghana. I think T.I. went, Ludacris, Rick Ross, Michael Jai White, and a couple other people went. They had a great time. Ghana speaking is of, 2-3 times safer.
And that's what I wanted to say. Speaking of Michael Jai White, he was talking about the Shaylon Monks are not real, right? He was like, they're just TV. And I did not know. I'm in karate, right? But they don't teach this, right? My sensei say, oh, you know, the Japanese man brought this to America. I did not know, but I found out from Michael Jai White, he was on Vlad TV podcast, that it was actually a black man that brought martial arts to the Asian people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when you go to Africa, yeah. When you go to Egypt, you see people practicing martial arts on the walls. That's something astronomy, mathematics, science, all of that stuff started in Africa. You know what I'm saying?
And I didn't know because they don't teach you that.
No, they're not going to teach you that.
No, they don't teach you that. They don't show you all these black people in there doing the, you feel me? You know, we talking about the, you know, you ain't getting none of that from a lot of black people, right? And it's funny because, you know, me being in karate, right? And then I'm going to do some jiu-jitsu and everything. But me doing that, a lot of black people that I've talked to or told that I'm doing that is like, really? Like, yeah, it's part of us, man. Especially when I found that out, I'm really going to stick to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, why wouldn't I? You get what I mean?
Definitely me, man. All of that stuff. Music, yoga, meditation, religion, spirituality, dancing. All of that stuff come from Africa. And I can show it to you. That's why I do the educational tours. We go to different parts of Africa. We don't just go to Egypt. We go to Ghana. We go to South Africa. We go to Kenya. We go to Senegal. We go to Cape Verde. We go to Ethiopia. We go to Madagascar, Tanzania. You know, so people can see the full spectrum of what the continent has to offer, because a lot of times we look at Africa as one general place. So imagine being in America and you go to Mexico and you go to Cuba and Haiti and Dominican Republic and Jamaica. All of these places are in North America, but they're totally different. The people look different. The food is different. The weather is different. They have different laws. They speak a different language. So Africa is probably 10 times more diverse than that.
Hey, you know what's crazy? Talking about the map, right? Mm-hmm. America's not that damn big.
Right.
You know, if you look at the United States of America, it's damn near almost the size of Africa. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. That is not true. America's not that big. But the lady was talking about it's a manipulation. They show you Africa this small. They show you America this big. They show you these other countries and they show, look how big they show Russia, You know, but the places of people of color that dominates, they don't show it that big. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And there's a reason being. Inferior. Yeah, they don't want to do that. You think they want you, if a lot of black people would know that we are greater than what people that oppressed our ancestors are still doing systematic racism and oppressing now. And look, it's a reason why I don't chat the Black Lives Matter. I believe Black Lives Matter, no doubt. But that movement wasn't started by us. And that's what gets me, man. It's like we let them start our movements, start our colleges. HBCUs was not started by a Black person. It started by a Jew, right? And it's cool understanding what it is, but I'm just saying we have always let other people start things and do things for us, and then we take it and say it's ours. So is it really a HBCU? And no. What you call it, a HBCU? But let's be real, though. Look who started it. Has any other Black person besides, I know, W.D. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, I want to say. I know they ended up having schools, but I know they had help from the Jews also. But the first HBCU was founded by a Jew, not by a Black person. But we support HBCUs. Why? Because we're conditioned to say this is a Black college. But is it really a Black college? If you do your history, is it really a Black? And most of the Black colleges are funded by the state. I'm in Nashville, TSU, funded by the state. How many Black colleges? Name one Black college, one, that are in the top conference in sports. Name one Black college. Name one Black college in the SEC. Name one Black college in the Big East. Name one Black college in the Big Ten. Name one. Just give me one. One HBCU that is in a big conference. The Ivy League schools are. They got Yale. You feel me? And playing in college. And Yale is, you know, they'll put Yale and all these other schools, Ivy League schools, in these conferences, but not no Black colleges is. You can't name one.
Right.
You feel me? Why you think that is?
Man, it all go back to the history and the foundation of this country. I mean, we was brought here for one purpose. So, you know what I'm saying?
To build it. To build it. That's why we was brought here. And I got to give my props to the white folks. I'm going to give my props to them. This is the props I want to give. When you can bring people to this country and make them do your work, then all these years pass. Now it's the Willie Lynch syndrome. You don't even got to make them no more. They going to come. You ain't got to make them sign a record deal and fuck them out of their money. They going to come like, oh, yeah, what? You want to fuck me out of my money? Cool. You get what I mean? I remember in the 90s, there was a lot of Black clothing, like a lot of Black designers and stuff. And now you got, look, I ain't bashing nobody, but then you got a lot of these Black artists that get on there and they be like, you know, man, I want everything to be more Black owned. You know, I do this, do that. Then the next minute, he's in a new Gucci. He in a new Louis Vuitton. He just bought the new Rolex. But damn, just a week ago, you talked about Black this, own Black that. I want to wear Black. Come on, man. Like, let's be real.
Right, man.
You know, like, what you think about that? Like, especially with the Black designers, too. Because I think we don't have the Black designers that we had in the 90s. And what I'm saying, not saying there's not no Black designers anymore, but I think that we don't have the mainstream Black designers like we once had in the early 90s.
I mean, it's like this, man. Pretty much, basically, Black people create a lot of industries for other groups of people. So with anything, like we buy hair, we buy fake hair, we buy fake nails, we buy expensive clothes, we go to jail, we buy this or we buy that. Even if we play, say we do music, you got the rapper, you got the producer, but the label owner, the executives, the A&Rs, the studio engineer, the person that builds the studio, the person that packaged the CD, the person that distributed the CD, delivered the CD, published the CD. You know what I'm saying? It's so many non-Black people that profiting from all of these things. So just like we just had a holiday, Juneteenth. Who you think gonna make the most money off of that? Walmart, Target, and non-Black.
You better know it.
So it's like that with everything. It's no exception. So as long as you're in America, you know what I'm saying? You pretty much gonna have to go with what they're saying, or you're gonna be constantly in a state of rebellion and fighting, and you're gonna be disgruntled. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna be oppressed. So that's one of the things. As soon as you go to Africa, you're gonna feel like you got a 50-pound weight off your back. Imagine you going to a country that wants you there. They want your money. They want your business to succeed. They want you to bring jobs. They want you to be there. They want to protect you. They want to see you thrive. They don't benefit from you going to jail. They're not building jails to make money off of you. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Very powerful, brother. Very powerful. Hey, before we get to the last two segments, man, I would like for you to tell everybody where they can find your new podcast that you got going on, and everything you at. Tell them where they can find you at.
Oh, yeah, man. I got music. I'm an MC. I got a book. I'm an author. I'm a podcast host now. You know what I'm saying? So you can connect with me. I'm on Facebook, Camp Cleveland. Instagram, Camp Cleveland. My YouTube is Camp Cleveland. I have a website, campcleveland.org. I do genealogy. I do family trees. I help people research their roots and reconnect with their relatives. I find things like slave schedules, marriage licenses, death certificates, birth certificates, World War II cards, old articles, old pictures. So I've helped people research their ancestry into the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, you know. So all of these things are accessible through, you know, social media or my website.
That was up, everybody. And so we're going to get to this first segment. And the first segment is called Under the Bus. Basically, I give you two people and you got to throw one under the bus, one you got to keep. So here it is. And this is going to be a horror, man. And I had to do you like this because you are a woke Black man. So Martin Luther King or Malcolm X?
I'm going to ride with Malcolm.
You better know it, because I will ride with Malcolm. Nothing against you, Martin Luther King, but you should have knocked them people out when they would smack you in the store. None of that. I got to be by any means necessary. So guess what, everybody? Camp Cleveland, a.k.a. Tanya Uru, has thrown Martin Luther King Jr. under the bus, and he's picked Malcolm X. Rest in peace to both of them, civil rights leader. But Malcolm X has prevailed, and that is what I'm talking about. So now we're going to get to the last segment of this podcast, and it's called Brutally Honest. Basically, I ask him you a question, and you give me your honest answer. If you don't, I will roast you, because I've been looking at everything behind you. I've been looking at your hairline and everything, and you will get roasted. So you better make sure you give me a true answer, brother. So here is the question. The question is, have you ever fucked a dude chick you didn't like?
Man, not to my recollection.
So when a guy, you're like, man, I don't even like dude, man. I'm a bonus girl. I'm bone her.
I don't get down like that. I mean, I ain't never got down like that, man. I'll be too busy focused on my travels. I got so many to choose from. You know, I ain't got.
It could have been when you was 16. It could have been when you was teenager. Just some part of your life.
Nah, bro.
Hey, I remember what Ply said.
Being real. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Shit, you know.
You know, Ply said, nigga, owe me some money. He ain't got to pay me. Keep playing with me. I'm a fuck your old lady. Whatever. Have I ever did that, deliberately knocked a dude chick because that nigga tried to play? Yes, I have. How old was I? I was very young. A little bit immature. But I was young, immature, did it. Is what it was. The dude ended up getting in a fight. You know, I'm like, why are you fighting me? You need to be checking your chick. And that's the thing about dudes these days. You know, you checking this dude, your chick the one busting it wide open. That's who you need to be checking, because a dude going to be a dude, right? He going to knock something out to come his way. But you can't get mad at the dude for knocking your chick either way. You got to check her. You know what I mean? But anyway, man, if y'all want to listen to my music, man, y'all make sure y'all go to Joaquin on any platform at WYQEEM. That's WYQ. Eric, Mimi, Mama, Mumu. And if y'all want to listen to my music videos, y'all can go to Joaquin TV. That's WYQ. Eric, Mimi, Mama, Mumu TV. And this is Heat Level Podcast. You can get it on Pandora, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or you can go to heatlevelpodcast.com. And y'all make sure y'all like, comment, share, like, comment and share, okay? That helps other algorithm, and that would get people to come in and listen to this podcast. So, Mr. Tanya Uru, aka Camp Cleveland, do you have any inspiring words for the people before we get up out of here?
Man, I just want to thank you again for inviting me to the show. It's definitely an honor. I'm thankful for the viewers that's tuning in. I mean, only thing I can say to you is keep grinding, stay strong, follow your dreams, don't give up, don't quit, be patient. You can do anything you want to do, man. So I ain't come from a rich family. I ain't come from no silver spoon, but I was able to accomplish my dreams. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, and guess what, man? In the words of Mr. Tanya, we're going to say this right here. Travel the world. Know where you came from. Especially my black people. Look, Africa is beautiful. You got to go visit. I'm going to visit. I just got my passport. We will be touching down in Africa sooner than you think. So everybody best believe I'm going to be a world traveler too. Shout out to all my woke black men. No doubt. Rest in peace, Malcolm X. Rest in peace, Martin Luther King Jr. Rest in peace to every civil right activists that always fought for us and the ones that died just so we can be doing what we're doing now. So y'all know how I always say I'm about this beat. Every time they hear they ride, every time they hear this beat, every time they in the spot, every time I'm on they street, they listening to me. Every time they in